From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane, filling in for Terry Gross. It's been more than 3 years since a freak stage accident left Curtis Mayfield paralyzed from the neck down. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, we feature a talk with the great soul singer and songwriter and listen to some of Mayfield's records from the 60s and 70s, like People Get Ready, Keep On Pushing, We're a Winner, and Freddy's Dead. Also, some early material from a couple of comics. We talk with Richard Lewis and Robert Townsend. Lewis has a new sitcom this fall on Fox, and Townsend has a new movie in which he plays a reluctant superhero. And rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Sweet Relief, a benefit album for singer-songwriter Victoria Williams. That's all coming up on today's Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Clinton said today that the United States will take an active role in guaranteeing the peace agreement between Israel and the PLO. The United States prepared to resume contacts with the PLO today and to host a signing ceremony for the two sides on Monday. At the same time, the Associated Press quoted a senior U.S. official as saying that Jordan and Israel are within a few details of concluding an agenda for peace. The official said that agreement would be announced on Tuesday. In Moscow, the Russian government praised the breakthrough agreement on mutual recognition between Israel and the PLO and compared its historic importance to the fall of the Berlin Wall. NPR's Kathleen Hunt reports.
Speaking at a press briefing today, a foreign ministry spokesman hailed Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization for their courageous and far-sighted step. He also stressed the role of Russia as a co-sponsor with the U.S. in the two-year-long peace process. The Russian government, he said, had been aware of the secret contacts leading up to the accord and had been in touch with Syria and Jordan prior to the announcement. Historically, the Kremlin has had what one official called privileged relations with the PLO, and today the foreign ministry said that Russia had been certain from the start that dialogue with the PLO was indispensable. According to the Palestinian news agency, Moscow tried to work out with Arafat ways of breaking an earlier stalemate in the negotiations. This is Kathleen Hunt in Moscow.
Nigerian electoral and political officials agreed today to hold new presidential elections next February. They would replace the June elections that the military regime annulled, touching off widespread rioting and strikes. Cindy Shiner of Africa News Service reports from Abidjan.
The National Electoral Commission and political party leaders said the polls would be held on February 19th, with a possible runoff on March 5th. The decision was endorsed by leaders of the Democratic Party of millionaire industrialist Moshood Abiola, the man widely believed to have won June's elections. The party has been split since shortly after former military ruler Ibrahim Babangida annulled the election results. Abiola has been in the United States and Europe for more than a month, seeking Western support for his claim to the presidency. He had planned to return to Nigeria next week, but a spokesman in London today said he would not return for some time. Ambitious strikes in support of Abiola fizzled out after a week. It appears as though political and labor leaders are willing to give interim head of state Ernest Shonekan a chance to make the democratic reforms that they were unable to win from Babangida. For National Public Radio, I'm Cindy Shiner in Abidjan.
Stock prices closed sharply higher today on Wall Street after news of an unexpected drop in wholesale prices. The Dow Jones Industrials gained 32 points to close at 3,621.6. The NASDAQ Composite Index gained 6.4 to close at 744. Advancing issues led declines by 2-1. This is NPR. Police in Miami say they've arrested a third suspect in the highway murder of a German tourist. Yesterday, police arrested a 19-year-old man accused of driving a van that was used in the killing. The van was allegedly part of a scheme to bump the tourist's rental car, then rob him when he stopped to examine the damage. The German tourist, who was driving to Miami Beach with his pregnant wife, refused to stop, and he was shot to death. Today, police arrested a 19-year-old woman accused of firing the shot and a 19-year-old man said to have been riding in the van. A federal scientific advisory committee recommended today human testing of an experimental gene therapy treatment for AIDS. NPR's David Barron reports.
Researchers at the University of California at San Diego have been given preliminary approval to test their treatment on 6 people infected with the AIDS virus. The experiment will involve extracting white blood cells called CD4 lymphocytes from the patients. These cells are normally killed by the AIDS virus, causing a patient's immune system to fail. But the scientists hope to protect these cells by inserting a gene that should disable the virus and keep it from reproducing. These altered cells will be grown in a laboratory and re-injected into the patients. The San Diego scientists still need approval from the director of the National Institutes of Health and from the Food and Drug Administration before the experiment can begin. The researchers hope to start testing their therapy before the end of the year. I'm David Barron in Washington.
A lawyer for Dr. Jack Kevorkian said today that the retired Michigan pathologist has assisted in another suicide. The incident comes one day after a Michigan court ruled that Kevorkian would have to stand trial for helping a man commit suicide in August. A Michigan law against assisted suicide took effect in June. Kevorkian says he considers the law unconstitutional. A county prosecutor said today that he may seek to have Kevorkian's bond revoked because of the latest incident. This is NPR.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowain. As part of our weekly series of interviews from our archives, we're featuring this conversation, which Terry Gross had with Curtis Mayfield this past March. Mayfield is one of the great singers and songwriters of soul music. In the 60s, with his group The Impressions, he had such hits as Gypsy Woman, People Get Ready, I'm So Proud, We're a Winner, and It's All Right. In the 70s, he did the soundtrack for Superfly. In 1990, he wrote some of the music for the sequel, The Return of Superfly. Later that year, he was the victim of a freak stage accident. He was performing at an outdoor concert before an audience of about 10,000 in Brooklyn, New York, when a lighting scaffold was blown over by a gust of wind. It fell on Mayfield, breaking his neck, leaving him paralyzed from the neck down. Shawnee Records has released a new tribute record featuring Mayfield's songs performed by Jerry Butler, Delbert McClinton, Bunny Wailer, and others. Half of the royalties will go toward Mayfield's medical bills. Today, we pay tribute to Curtis Mayfield with his interview with Terry Gross and with some of his great records.
We're a winner, and never let anybody say, well, you can't make it, cause a feeble mind is in your way. No more tears do we cry, and we have finally dried our eyes, and we're moving on up, moving on up. Lord have mercy, we're moving on up, moving on up. We're living proof and all's alert that we're two from the good black bird, and we're a winner. And everybody knows it too, we just keep on pushing, like your leaders tell you to. At last that blessed day has come, and I don't care where you come from. We're all moving on up, moving on up. Lord have mercy, we're moving on up, moving on up. Woo.
I asked Curtis Mayfield if he's been able to write songs since his accident.
No, I haven't been writing, to be honest. Since my injury, there's been no writings from Curtis. However, I hope that these things may change very soon, being that there are different computers and instruments that I'm about to get off into that may help me to relate my writings as well as my music through vocal contact and what have you.
Is there still a lot of music in your head?
Oh, yeah, I think so. With me, everything is a song. Probably even through our conversation, there may be a few ideas.
Do you have memories of the accident, or do you not remember what happened?
Well, my personal memories of the accident are quite faint. Being as it did happen to me, I wasn't really around to observe too much.
What do you remember?
Being on the floor and waking up on the floor, paralyzed.
I'd like to talk with you, if you'd be willing, about your past and, you know, your music career. I know that when you were growing up, your grandmother had a church, the Traveling Soul Spiritualist Church. Did you hear her preach a lot?
Oh, yes. Reverend A.B. Mayfield, Annabelle Mayfield. And, of course, I heard her preach a lot. And I probably, even in my sleep, subconsciously observed a whole lot of her sermons. And I believe through herself and my mother, who was quite fond of all types of music and poems and things of that sort, she used to read to me a lot of the old Paul Laurence Dunbar writings and lyrics, and I was quite acquainted with the limericks and Dr. Seuss of the old years. And and of course, I identified with her teaching me a few things on the piano as a youngster. So through these two ladies, I believe over the years, I've carried out not only my ambitions, but theirs as well.
Now, did you sing in her church?
Yes, I did as I became older. Around 7, 8 years old, I became acquainted with my cousins, who was a part of the church, and they started a group known as the Northern Jubilees. And I believe this is what sort of laid out my fundamentals as to harmonies, because I can recall years ago playing and my watching this black and white specialty record, which was 78 RPMs then, and listening to such artists as Sam Cooke and the Soul Stirrers, the Five Blind Boys, and of course you'd have to wind up this Victrola that we had and insert needles every so many records to keep, you know, to keep it going proper. And this is how I got started, I believe, with my harmonies.
What part did you sing in the group?
I was always a tenor.
When you started playing guitar and started writing songs, were they secular songs or gospel songs?
They were what I would think pop songs, you know. While I have written a few gospel songs, which would be looked upon as gospel, I call them more inspirational. Such songs as People Get Ready and Keep On Pushing. Keep On Pushing actually was written as a gospel song. However, I found that all I need do was change one lyric or one word, and it was pop for us.
What, the word was God that you would change?
That's right. Instead of God gave me my strength, I said I've got my strength, and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing.
Why don't we play the impressions, People Get Ready? And maybe before we hear it, you could tell us about how you wrote the song, when you wrote it. What was going through your mind then?
Well, I can't really recall when I wrote this particular song, but this is a perfect example of what I believe has laid in my subconscious as to the preachings of my grandmother and most ministers when they reflect from the Bible. You know, people get ready, there's a train coming, there's no hiding place, you don't need no baggage, you just get on board.
Why don't we hear it? This is Curtis Mayfield and the Impressions.
People get ready, there's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. So people get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers coast to coast. Faith is the key, open the doors and board.
Curtis Mayfield is joining us from his home in Georgia. You became the lead singer of The Impressions after Jerry Butler left, and the first hit that you had with you as lead singer was Gypsy Woman. This was, I think, 1961. So you wrote the song, you sang lead. It's a great record. It's funny. The lyric is about something that I'm sure you had absolutely no firsthand knowledge of. You know, a gypsy woman who, all through the caravan, she was dancing with all the men. I mean, did you know any gypsy women when you wrote this?
No. And that's absolutely true. But I saw lots of Western movies.
Oh, right. I'm sure I saw the same ones.
Yes. And it's funny, 20, 25 years later, I'm in Germany, and I'm performing in concert, and I'm hearing people, calling for Gypsy Woman, which was in the repertoire, but I hadn't come to it yet. And after the show, I had an interview, such as what we're doing now, and the interviewer spoke in terms of there being lots of gypsies in the place, which was out of the ordinary. Gypsies never came to concerts. And, of course, they asked me about it, and I had no idea other than maybe the song. They liked the song. Well, after the interview, across the street, I'd been invited to a restaurant where there was about 50 to 75 gypsies. All the men sitting in a circle and their women in the middle. And when I walked in the place, they gave me a standing ovation, great applause. And one of the gentlemen came up to shake my hand and they say, "Curtis, we've been waiting for you for 20 years.
My guest is soul music star Curtis Mayfield. A freak stage accident in 1990 left him paralyzed from the neck down. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Curtis Mayfield is joining us from his home in Georgia. You were one of the first, pop songwriters to write songs that became, Black Pride anthems, songs like "Keep On Pushing," "I'm So Proud," "We're a Winner." Did you have any awakenings in that area? You know, was there a period when you became more involved with, the Black Consciousness movement? Or more?
Well, through my own ways, more so through my songs.
Mm-hmm.
However, through my songs, I became acquainted and met many people, such as Andrew Young and the Reverend Jesse Jackson and Martin Luther King and our mayor here, Mayor Jackson, and others. They were young men, and we were the youngsters coming up under them. And through many of our songs, and with the help of so many fans who were just people, we were involved.
Curtis Mayfield is my guest. He's joining us from his home in Georgia. Did you have any problems handling success as a young man?
No, I've always been, if you may allow me say, quite calm, cool, and collected.
That's good. Were the other people in the group able to handle it, too?
Oh, yes. Fred, Cash, Samuel Gooden, they were true brothers, and they still are. I mean, even to this day, and I'm 50 years old, I dream of these fellas, our being in concert and all the things that we probably have done. And I love them like brothers, maybe closer.
You said before that singing in the gospel group helped you understand harmonies and that you use some of those harmonies with the impressions. Let me play a record that I just particularly love the harmonies on. And this is I'm So Proud. It's really such a beautiful ballad. How would you work out the harmonies for one of the records? Maybe you could talk specifically about working out the harmonies on this one.
Well, a song like I'm So Proud, it just, there was nothing to work out. As soon as I would say prettier than all the world, through my melody would automatically come the harmonies of Fred and Sam. There was nothing to work out. It was easy as apple pie.
Let's hear I'm So Proud.
Prettier than all the world. And I'm so proud.
I'm so proud.
I'm so proud of you. You're only one fellow's girl. I'm so proud of being loved by you. And it would hurt to know if you ever were untrue. Sweeter than the taste of a cherry so sweet. And I'm so proud, girl.
I'm so proud.
I'm so proud of you. Compliments to you from all the people we meet. Yes, and I'm so proud.
I'm so proud.
Believe me, I love you too. I'm so proud of being loved by you.
Curtis Mayfield is my guest. Let me skip ahead to Superfly, the songs that you wrote for the film of that name. It's really such a great score, you know, such a great set of songs. How did you get the assignment to write the songs for the movie?
Well, a gentleman by the name of Philip Fentley in New York came to the Lincoln Center where I was appearing. Between shows, I met him and Sig Shore, who was to become the producer. Philip wrote the screenplay, and they were very hot about, especially Philip, who was from 125th Street in New York City. He wanted me to write the music for Superfly.
Was Superfly the first time that you used the wah-wah guitar?
It probably was.
How did you start doing that?
Well, I didn't use the wah-wah, to be honest. One of my guitarists actually introduced the wah-wah to me, and he was actually the wah-wah player.
It's funny, you know, every action TV show ended up like using that sound afterwards.
Well, that was a quite popular gadget or instrument.
Yeah. Let me ask you about one of the songs I particularly like from Superfly, and that's Freddy's Dead, which I think became one of the most popular songs from the movie. I mean, one of the really good things about it is that the way this song tells a whole story.
Well,
do you want to talk about writing
it? My
that?
Lyrics in song, if you listen closely, will not only give you a lyrical balance, but also give you a visual balance. And I think that's probably what was appreciated through Freddy's Dead, is that you could also see it visually. And it spoke of a young man who was a decent guy overall, but was dealing with the wrong crowd, in with the wrong crowd, and his doings were of of the lowest caliber, dealing with drugs, and his old lady wasn't helping him any either.
It is dead. That's what I said. Let the man rap a plan, said he'd send him home, but his hope was a rope, and he should have known. It's hard to understand. There was love in this man. I'm sure all would agree that his misery was this woman and things. Now Freddy's dead. That's what I say. Everybody's misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another junkie plan, pushing dope for the man. A terrible blow, but that's how it goes. A Freddy's on the corner now. If you wanna be a junkie, wow. Remember Freddy's dead. We're all built up with progress, but sometimes I must confess, we can deal with rockets and dreams, but reality, what does it mean? Ain't nothing said. Cause Freddy's dead.
The new record, People Get Ready, is a tribute to you by many artists, and I think the profits from the record are going to be used to help pay medical bills?
I'm sure it will. The monies are being accumulated, and they certainly are appreciated from all who has made tribute. And you're certainly right in with people of my such injuries, you probably wouldn't be surprised, but the bills and things that has to do with upkeep and care are tremendous.
You had health insurance when you had the accident, didn't you?
Luckily, I did. As a matter of fact, I got the health insurance about 6 months prior to the accident.
Wow. What inspired you to get it?
Well, I was looking for it all the time. I had always kept my family and myself insured, but there was a year or so that I could not afford to pay the $7,000-$8,000 insurances that was required of me, and I sort of got lost in the shuffle, such as many people. And upon regaining myself financially, I was able, through Ichiban, the help of John Abbey, and of course the company and people I worked for, to get health insurance, and right in the nick of time.
Curtis Mayfield spoke to Terry Gross from his home in Atlanta last March. Here's a track from the album People Get Ready, a tribute to Curtis Mayfield. This is Huey Lewis in the News with It's All Right. This is Fresh Air.
Boom, 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 boom.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
They say it's all right.
Boom, 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 boom.
They say it's all right.
Boom, 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 boom.
Say it's all right. Have a good time. Cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. Now we gonna move it slow.
Boom, boom, boom.
Up in the lights low.
Boom, boom, boom.
Up in your move it slow. It feels like a moan. Cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. And now listen to the beat.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. There's nothing funny about being sick or thinking you're sick, unless, of course, you're the comic Richard Lewis. Coming up, we feature a 1988 interview with Lewis from the time when he was performing his show, I'm Exhausted. He's got a new sitcom on Fox this fall with Don Rickles. Also, a talk with comic and film director Robert Townsend about auditioning for roles as pimps or stoolies and about Hollywood stereotyping of blacks, the subject of his 1987 satire, Hollywood Shuffle. Townsend's latest movie is called Meteor Man, about a reluctant superhero. And Ken Tucker reviews a new benefit album, Sweet Relief, which features Lou Reed, Pearl Jam, and others performing the music of singer-songwriter Victoria Williams, who has MS. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Laura Kanoy. A top U.S. official says Jordan and Israel have nearly finished a peace agreement. He says an announcement will come Tuesday, the day after a White House signing ceremony between Israel and the PLO. Meanwhile, in Tunis, the PLO's executive council has approved a self-rule accord with Israel. The agreement is a follow-up to a mutual recognition agreement endorsed yesterday. On both accords, the vote was 9-4. President Clinton announced today that the U.S. is resuming its dialogue with the PLO. NPR's Ted Clark reports.
The president said he's decided to resume contacts with the PLO because the organization has accepted Israel's right to exist, renounce violence, and promised to discipline PLO elements that violate these commitments. For most of its 30-year history, the PLO was shunned by American officials, except for a brief 18-month period in the late 1980s when there was a low-level U.S.-PLO dialogue. With contact now restored, the PLO has been invited to the White House Monday to sign the historic Israeli PLO Accord on Self-Rule for the Palestinians. President Clinton.
This declaration represents an historic and honorable compromise between two peoples who have been locked in a bloody struggle for almost a century. Too many have suffered far too long.
The White House says as many as 1,000 guests are expected at Monday's signing ceremony. This is Ted Clark in Washington.
The Senate today voted to press ahead with the next round of military base closings. The vote came as part of the debate on President Clinton's defense budget. California Democrat Dianne Feinstein failed to delay the base closings. She argued the economy needs to recover first. California could lose 9 major military facilities. Republican Senator Malcolm Wallop of Wyoming will not seek re-election in 1994, but may run for governor instead. Wallop is one of the Senate's more conservative members and has been a strong voice on the Strategic Defense Initiative and pro-development issues. NPR's Elizabeth Arnold reports.
Senator Malcolm Wallop will not seek a fourth term, according to his staff, but he has not yet made a decision on whether to run for governor of Wyoming. Wallop has served nearly 17 years in the Senate. He recently told a Chamber of Commerce dinner in Sheridan, Wyoming, that he was considering quitting because of the term limit initiative. Last November, Wyoming voters approved a measure mandating term limits for members of Congress and state legislators. Although Wallop opposed the initiative, he told the chamber, the state has spoken clearly on it. Wallop ran for governor of Wyoming in 1974. If he runs again, he may wind up facing two-term governor Michael Sullivan, who's not yet announced whether he'll seek re-election. With the addition of Wallop, 13 of the Senate's 44 Republican seats will be up in 1994, along with 21 of the 56 Democratic seats. I'm Elizabeth Arnold at the Capitol.
On Wall Street, stocks closed higher today. The Dow Jones Industrials gained more than 32 points. This is NPR. First Lady Hillary Rodham Clinton today blasted those who want to leave the health care system the way it is. Mrs. Clinton defended the health care reform package in a speech to state legislators. She said the administration is willing to alter the plan, but won't listen to those who reject all change. Mrs. Clinton added that the White House will not cut Medicare and Medicaid, but will curb the growth of those programs. The U.S. government is offering up to $2 million for information leading to the capture of a suspect in the World Trade Center bombing. Mandalit Del Barco of member station WNYC reports the suspect is believed to have fled to Iraq.
Abdul Rahman Yassin is the second fugitive suspect with a bounty for the February 26 attack. One anonymous source says Yassin is a U.S. citizen born in Bloomington, Indiana, who moved with his family in the 1960s to Iraq and who returned to this country last fall. The first reward in the World Trade Center bombing case was offered last month for Ramzi Ahmed Youssef, who is also believed to have fled to Iraq. Investigators are now intrigued with the possibility that a foreign government was involved in the bombing that left six people dead. The trial of four other suspects starts in New York City next week. The State Department issued leaflets with Yassin's photograph and a description calling him extremely dangerous. Officials say the government has paid more than $1.5 million over the last 3 years to a number of informants for tips leading to locating and prosecuting terrorists. For National Public Radio, I'm Andalit Del Barco in New York.
Boris Yeltsin's doctors say he's in good health, except for some pain in his lower back. The doctors released the Russian president's checkup results today. The information could end constant press reports that Yeltsin's ill. American officials are examining a new set of materials from Vietnam that could have some clues about the fate of missing Vietnam War pilots. A Pentagon spokesman says the records may be the most significant from Hanoi since the war ended. This is NPR News from Washington.
This is Fresh Air. We're continuing with our weekly series of interviews from the Fresh Air Archives with this conversation with Robert Townsend. Robert Townsend wrote, produced, directed, and starred in the semi-autobiographical film Hollywood Shuffle. He also wrote, directed, and starred in The Five Heartbeats and his current film, Meteor Man. He directed the Eddie Murphy performance film Raw, has acted in supporting roles in A Soldier's Story, Streets of Fire, and American Flyers, and also works as a stand-up comedian. Terry Gross spoke to Townsend in 1987 after the success of Hollywood Shuffle, in which a young black actor discovers that the only parts available to him are absurd black stereotypes. Townsend's memories of auditioning for the stock black roles as pimps and junkies were still very fresh.
I didn't know how to speak up at that point because every actor in town was in there auditioning, and I said, wait, this is a terrible script. Maybe it's me. And then I started thinking about it, and I would go in and read a script, and I go, this is terrible. And then the next guy, this is the greatest pimp I've ever read, you know. And I think it had to do with, you know, I began back then to begin to look and see something was wrong.
What kind of roles were you auditioning for that you're talking about?
Stoolies on TV shows, you know, the guys that always have the information that the cops always talk to, Huggy Bear, Turkey Neck, you know, they always have those weird names. So those are the kind of parts I would audition for.
Are you convincing in that kind of role?
I'm a good actor. I could pull it off. Yeah, I mean, I consider myself a good actor. You know, I wouldn't mind doing a street character if I could play a lawyer next week and a doctor the week after that, or a detective like Sam Ace or something like that.
But the problem is there aren't many roles like that to play.
Right. They always write the stereotypical, you know, just jive street.
The character in your movie is directed to be blacker while he's playing a part or auditioning for a part. Were you ever directed to be more black?
Oh, yeah, because, see, the way I talk, when you're considered black, you're supposed to talk like, well, yeah, baby, you know, I'm doing this interview and things with you. So that's the way I should talk. That's considered black. If I was saying like, oh, this is national radio, baby, that's black. But the way I'm talking now, then they say, well, you don't sound black. I mean, you could, you know, if I was just tuning in, I would say, is this a black person? I don't give you the key words. And so a lot of times they ask you to be blacker because black is, you know, all the, you know, sitcoms of the 70s. And they say what? So that's considered black.
Now, you've also been in some TV commercials. For years, there were virtually no black actors in TV commercials, but now especially in burger commercials and in soft drink commercials, there's a lot of black actors in it. Are there new stereotypes of blacks coming out through these commercials?
No, I think commercials, if anything, they show black people in a better light. I mean, in TV commercials, at least I had dignity in 60 seconds. I mean, I was a bank teller, I was a construction worker, I was a plumber, just a regular guy hanging out at an office building, you know, waiting on a date. I mean, they have different, you know, commercials at least show life. You'll see a black family on a TV commercial. On TV shows, you never see that. You know, you'll see, like, for McDonald's, you'll see, it's time to go, our family's on our way to McDonald's. Hey, Dad, you know, and they'll show, like, a loving family or Tide commercial. they, you know, show a family with a mother and father. Your average show on TV, it's always, I had to raise these kids on my own, and I'd never seen they daddy.
What are some of the movies you liked when you were growing up?
Wizard of Oz. My favorite film of all time is Here Comes Mr. Jordan with Robert Montgomery. That was one of my favorite films.
I love that film. That's the film about the boxer who's been reincarnated, basically, sent back
right.
down to Earth.
Yeah, Claude Rains, Robert Montgomery, and Warren Beatty did the updated version with Buck Henry and James Mason. It's like, Joe, listen, Joe, you're not Pendleton, Joe. You can't stay in this body, Joe. You know, that was one of my favorite films.
As a teenager, did you like any of the exploitation films like Shaft and Superfly?
I love those movies because that was the first time we saw the black man get the girl. You know, I remember seeing the scene in Superfly when he made love in the bathtub, and it was like, I can't believe this. Because other than that, black people had played butlers, and it's like, you want your luggage, Mr. Jenkins? And that was the only role we played. And so when you saw Shaft, and he had a gun, and he slapped people around, and he fought for right, you know, it was like, great. We had never seen it. Because normally, the black actor was the buddy to the star. He never, you know, like, he never was the man. You know, he never was in charge and said, I'm fighting for right. And that's what I'm going to do here. You guys are bad, you know. And Shaft was that way, and Superfly was that way. I just think that they made more pimp movies than they made movies about, you know, black people from the regular walks of life. I think that's what messed everything up. There were too many negative role models. I mean, if they would have had a pimp movie and then a movie about a doctor, then a movie about a lawyer, and a movie about a guy who was in love, everything would have been fine. But it was just, you know, 90 pimp movies versus one sounder. You know, that was what the deal was.
Film writer, director, and actor Robert Townsend spoke to Terry Gross in 1987. His current film, Meteor Man, came out this summer and continues to play in theaters around the country. Next, Richard Lewis after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Comedian Richard Lewis toiled for many years doing stand-up comedy in clubs. He has since moved on to performing in large arenas and appeared many times on The David Letterman Show. Several years ago, he also began starring in TV sitcoms. He shared the bill with Jamie Lee Curtis in Anything But Love. He currently stars with Don Rickles in their new show, Daddy Dearest. Terry Gross spoke with Richard Lewis in 1988 when he had a comedy special on HBO called I'm Exhausted.
Thank you. I just, you're a great audience. I wish I could feel better about feeling good, quite frankly. I'm a hypochondriac. My grandparents, they lived in a place that made me so out of it in Florida. I think the condo was called Crestfallen. That was the name of it, you know. So I feel, you know, and they bought me little gifts. I mean, well, they were very negative. We had like a little depression fair in the backyard for my birthday, and we used to throw wooden hoops around. Prescription drugs was a big thing. And they had No Tomorrowland, which is sort of a big thing, and Pin the Blame on the Donkey was a major game in my house.
How did the I'm Exhausted show come about? Do you go around saying to friends all the time, oh God, I'm exhausted?
I said that actually, I think, to my mother moments after I was born. I just have always been exhausted for the fear that I wouldn't do enough work. That's a whole other area, isn't it? No, I don't always go around saying I'm exhausted. I'm a good friend. If I went to a funeral, I wouldn't be insensitive and say, I'm exhausted. I had been exhausted prior to doing this special for HBO. But the problem was the special had to be done in about 2 weeks. And that was like, this should have been an episode of Nova, you know. how a Jewish man with bad posture who searches for perfection is told by executives that, fine, but we have to have it delivered in 2 weeks. And, you know, we pulled it off, I think. I don't know. But I was exhausted doing it, and I think it shows. But in a positive, affectionate way.
When do you allow yourself to take some time off? Here's what I'm thinking of. I know I'm the kind of person who, in order to take a day off, I have to have something measurable, like a temperature. You know, like, right. If I have a fever, fine, you stay home. Are you like that? I mean, do you need to have something really tangible, a real tangible problem in order to actually get some rest?
I need, basically, I get rest after a breakup from a relationship. I usually then feel I reward myself. I usually go away for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
Without sounding, tongue-in-cheek here too much. I mean, I really put a lot into relationships, and when they don't pan out, I then take a rest. I also, when I get the flu, God forbid, but when I do, it's like everything stops. I pull the phones out of my house. I don't care. I have absolutely no responsibility to anyone. I don't go to surprise parties. I'm in the bed. I'm in the bed for as long as it takes. I just feel as nauseated as I am. It's the only time I really relax.
Did you enjoy being sick when you were a kid?
Well, I did because I usually wasn't. But people did. It was like a hypochondriacal kabuki theater I put on for the family. And I had different makeups for different ailments, of course. The flu, I felt, was the dead giveaway. I mean, it was this kabuki, very white makeup. And it was almost a mask-like effect. And it was frightening. I was half a bison, half a Jewish man, and it was... I come down to breakfast knowing that my family would shriek and then have me stay home, and they normally did.
Are you a hypochondriac now?
Yes, sadly.
What are the diseases you most often think you're getting?
Well, I would say mostly, and not to make light of diseases because they're so horrific, and certainly the sexual stuff now is so frightening. I basically get worried when I see any kind of rash, even if the slightest rash. I feel it will eventually spread into just cover me like Elephant Man. And I run to every salve store. There's a lot of salve boutiques in Los Angeles, thank God. And I have a rash man in Beverly Hills who I like. But basically, it's rashes that scare me more than anything. And also, any kind of back pain, I always fear, and I always did as a kid, sadly, whenever I got a sore throat, for example, I really felt... it would never go away. This was when I should have known then that psychotherapy was right around the corner.
Do you ever have audiences who are so well adjusted that they don't get your jokes about neuroses?
I don't like to consider any audience well adjusted. Seriously, I don't like to judge people, and I certainly wouldn't judge people in that light. I don't find too many people are well-adjusted, and if there were, I wouldn't go over very well. If I ever bomb, thank God I don't bomb as much as you do when you start out, I would just blame myself.
Can I ask you what your bar mitzvah was like? And here's why I ask it. A bar mitzvah is, in Jewish terms, it's a religious ceremony to mark the beginning of manhood. But for a lot of people, it's like their first opening act, you know, like their first initiation into show business. Because like you're the star of the show. There's a band. There's an MC. You know, everybody in your family gets to dance and everything. And you're the star. Was it like what kind of bar mitzvah did you have?
Spielberg could not have done justice to what I had. First of all, my father, who's passed on, was the greatest caterer in the area, New Jersey and in parts of New York. He was really a genius. So, of course, he catered my bar mitzvah. It got off on a low self-esteem note that my father was booked up on the weekend for my bar mitzvah. I had to settle for a Tuesday afternoon.
Are you kidding?
Early evening bar mitzvah party. Unheralded in the Torah. I mean, I heard Moses grumbling, how can he do that to his son? Rah! But what happened was, I understood. You know, he had a job to do, and Tuesday night was sort of hip. Now that I think of it, but before the party, I had to the Saturday before I had to read what they call the Haftorah or Haftorah. I'm very bad with the accents here, but. What happened was that I started screwing up a little bit, and I saw some of the congregation getting a little uneasy, and then I started doing stand-up. I went, oh, I'm kidding, Jonah and the Whale, come on. And I started playing the temple like a lounge.
I mean, I don't mind being with the family at Hanukkah, because being on the road, like I was in the Deep South about 2 years ago on Hanukkah, they thought Hanukkah was a duck call. That's all I know. It was like, Hanukkah, pull a chute. That's all, you know. I tiptoed around the Deep South on Hanukkah. I just want a sandwich. I'll be fine. Just let me have a sandwich. But Hanukkah, Christmas, we didn't know what we were, quite frankly. It was sort of a... I really don't know what we were. We had like a... There was a Christmas tree, and yet it was a Hanukkah bush. It was sort of like a... an elephant man kind of thing there. It was like, they had balls hanging down, and yet there was like a picture of Golda Meir sort of over here. It wasn't Hanukkah, it wasn't Christmas, it was Chronicah. We had Chronicah.
Comedian Richard Lewis spoke with Terry Gross in 1988. He is currently starring as the psychiatrist's son of Don Rickles on the new show, Daddy Dearest. It can be seen on Sunday nights on the Fox Network. This is Fresh Air. Linda Wertheimer has joined us to tell us about some of the stories they'll be covering on All Things Considered today. I assume, Linda, there'll be a lot of things on the Middle East.
That's right. The president has spoken out on the peace accords, Marty, and we will cover that, as well as hear from Robert Siegel on the right wing in Israel, which opposes the accords, and from those groups that are inside and outside the PLO, which oppose the accords. We also will have a piece from Anne Garrels on U.S. Bosnia policy with interviews from some of those people who resigned from the State Department in protest. And we'll have some other things. The U.S. Open, an insect zoo opens at the Smithsonian, and a review of the band played on.
Thanks, Linda. Those stories and more later today on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. Sweet Relief is the name of a new benefit album organized to help Victoria Williams, a singer-songwriter who has recently been stricken with multiple sclerosis. It features performances of Williams songs by musicians including Lou Reed, Lucinda Williams, Pearl Jam, and Soul Asylum. Rock critic Ken Tucker has a review. Here's Lou Reed's version of Williams' Tarbelly and Featherfoot.
Tarbelly stood in the door, eyes bulging out, body like a statue, hands high on his hips, and his mouth, why his mouth, drooling like a leaky spout. Looking for something from another day, a day when she could ask him and he would want to play.
As you can tell from that unusually warm, inviting performance by Lou Reed, Victoria Williams writes songs that are most often shaggy dog stories. Compositions built around long, meandering lines and discursive melodies. It's not surprising that Williams wasn't able to hang on to the major label contract she snagged in the late 80s. Williams made two albums for Warner Brothers that were interesting, eccentric, full of talent and promise, but definitely the stuff of cult stardom. She's the sort of musician that other, more commercial musicians love. Artists like the grungy hard rockers Pearl Jam prize Williams' unique, unruly qualities. On Sweet Relief, Pearl Jam turns down its usual volume to offer a subtle performance of Crazy Mary.
She lived on a curve in the road, in an old tar paper shack, on the south side of the town, on the wrong side of the tracks. Sometimes on the way into town, we'd say, Mama, can we stop and give her a ride? Sometimes we did, but her hands flew from her side. Wild-eyed, crazy Mary. Parsons place, the old blue car we used to race, a little country store with a sign tacked to the side, said no L-O-I-T-E-R-I-N-G-A loud. Underneath that sign always congregated quite a crowd. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it around. Take a bottle, drink it down, pass it around.
Like a lot of non-superstar musicians, Victoria Williams didn't have any health insurance when she was diagnosed with MS, and the profits from Sweet Relief are going to pay for her medical bills. Enthusiasm and sincerity shine through this music, and the finest performances here make sense of much of Williams' dreamy music. I think the collection's best match of song and artist is Matthew Sweet's spacey, luminous version of This Moment. By all reports, the 34-year-old Williams has recovered enough to do some writing and performing again. It may just be that the next time she ventures out on a tour, Sweet Relief will have introduced her hard-edged winsomeness to a much larger audience.
Ken Tucker writes about popular culture for Entertainment Weekly.
Willows were swaying, the water was rippling, the froggies were singing, along with the lapping at the bank. We have the moon to thank for this lovely scene we might never have seen if it hadn't have been for the moon. Why, look at that moon, away up high, seeing everything that goes by. Why, look at that moon.
Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, and Joan Tui with Nancy Greenlease. Research assistance from Louisa Shafia. Devin Reif is our intern. Terry Gross is back on Monday. I'm Marty Moscoway.
Who, my, oh my, it would be if it never been above that faithful little ball, that one that has beheld true love to history. Start. Why must the lovers part? Why does the cheating go on? Why have hearts turned to stone? Why look at that moon?
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the peace accord between Israel and the PLO. We talk with Palestinian-American Nasir Arouri, professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts, and with American-Israeli Zev Chaifetz, editor of the Israeli news magazine, The Jerusalem Report. Hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.